Well, you know, there have been individuals, there's been communities, just a handful through the centuries that have actually defied the odds, that have actually done something that changes the world, that fundamentally challenges the way that kind of our world works, or we think that our world works, and it begins to change the world around them. And so, as Eric said, 18 months ago, we began this thing called the Game Change Initiative, the Game Change Campaign. And our goal was to really create sustainable change across the landscape of our community here in the greater northeast side of Indianapolis. And really the vision was to continue to create an ongoing infrastructure where people can experience Jesus and see the life change that happens when they begin to realize that Jesus is very relevant to their lives. And so we're revisiting that today. We're at the halfway point. And I know for many of us over these last 18 months, it's been a strengthening journey. It's been 18 months of really growing us and challenging us. And we're kind of going to look at where we are, but we're also going to be re-enlisting and enlisting for the first time those of us who are here maybe who have joined Crosspoint over the last 18 months, because we want everybody here to be game changers. So we're excited you're here this morning. My name's Kurt, by the way, if we haven't had a chance to meet. And let me just say again, I know Eric lifted this up, but how about the band this morning? Was that not phenomenal on a holiday weekend? Believer, just knocked it out of the park. Awesome. Well, you know, one of the ways we're changing the game, as you've heard us talking about, and you'll continue to hear us talking about, is this early weekend service. This is one of the things that has been on our radar for some time. And basically, we're really multiplying what we do on Sundays. What we do right here in kids in the venue is going to be reproduced on Thursday evenings. And we're trying to create new pathways, because we've been realizing that there are a lot of people that weekends just don't work when it comes to church. And there's very few churches getting off the weekend doing the very same thing during the week that allow people to connect who can't make weekends. And so this is all a part of the broadening infrastructure that we've been doing through the Game Change Initiative that's allowing us to take steps like getting out of the box, getting out of the status quo, and doing something different. So I really hope over these next 5 weeks, as we kind of go through this Game Changers series, that we all see that we have a role in what God is doing here. So let me pray to that end before we go any further this morning. God, we just thank you for this time here this morning. We thank you that you are a game changer, that you are a God who gets out of the box. And I just pray, God, that our time here today would not be wasted in this dark room on this beautiful Sunday, God, but that you would help us to get a glimpse of your heart. God, that you would help our heart to break for the things that your heart breaks for, and help us to see our role in what you're doing, what you continue to do right here in our community. And God, we just pray these things according to your name, your identity, and your power, Jesus. Amen. Well, you know, this whole Game Change Initiative really was about, you know, helping fund some of the infrastructure things that the Crosspoint just needed to continue to grow on, to continue to be about the mission that we're on here. And many of us gave things. We gave things up beyond what we normally give to Crosspoint, above our normal giving. And we all did this. In fact, the name of the Game Change series came as a result of an article that we read a few years ago in the New Yorker magazine by Malcolm Gladwell. It was called When David Beats Goliath. And it really talked about, you know, what these figures, these underdog figures that always defy the odds. In fact, he defies a game changer, somebody who gets out of the norm and plays the game differently. And as a church, this has always been our mantra here at Crosspoint. I mean, since our very early days, since we launched across the street at Fall Creek Intermediate School, you know, we've been saying things that aren't being said. We've been trying to tackle issues and topics that aren't the typical things that churches dive into. We've been trying to do things that aren't being done. And in a real sense, we've been building something that is even yet to still be fully seen. And so, you know, it's exciting to us, because this is how God moves. This is how God changes things when individuals, when organizations get out of the status quo and try to do things differently. And there are many game changers in our culture today, right? I mean, at least that are given the name game changer. In fact, just a few recent articles, Alexa, Amazon's new toy, they said, oh, this is gonna be a game changer. Yeah, Alexa's not really a game changer. It's just a reiteration of a product that already existed, right? Amazon, Whole Foods partnership, they recently said, oh, this is gonna change. This will be a game changer in how, you know, food is delivered. And it maybe, you know, really it's just two big companies, one getting absorbed by the other to make a better profit in a different way and now delivering Whole Foods. The Kelly-Trump partnership, people said, oh, this is gonna change the game. Maybe, I don't know. I think, you know, the trajectory of the Trump administration still on the same trajectory. I don't know if it's really changing the game or not. Even in sports, you may have recently seen the articles about how CTE was found in 99% of former NFL players' brains. And if you saw the Concussion movie a couple years ago, I'm a huge football fan, by the way. I love football. Can't wait for next weekend. Loved yesterday. When I saw the Concussion movie, I was bummed. I was like, man, this is going to be a game changer. May even be the end of football if we really take seriously the effects of concussions. Apparently not. The NFL just ended their partnership for concussion research. Because when you own a day of the week, you do whatever you want, right? And so we see these things that we think are going to be game changers, and they're not game changers at all, right? But when you begin to realize that you're dead in your transgressions and you move to being a rescued child of God like we looked at last weekend, or when you go from working on your own to try to justify yourself and earn your way back up the pecking order to God to seeing that there's nothing I can do, God has actually done for me already what I can't do for myself. You know, when you have a change because of the power of God and your life goes from being self-centered and selfish to being a life who's God-centered and selfless because of the power of God, God changes the game. God actually uses people's lives to begin to create a trajectory and a change that we can't create on our own. And when God does this in our lives, he then recruits us onto his team. He actually pulls us into his family, and he puts us to work to help others come into that same relationship that we've experienced. And so today I want to kind of look at five marks of people who are changing the game, all right? Five marks of game changers, because we, if we're honest, that's what Crosspoint's about. We want to be game changers. So number one, game changers are discontent with the status quo. Game changers are not happy with the way things are going. Everybody else is happy. Everybody else is like, oh, our community's great. Things are looking up. Things are looking good. Game changers, they step back and they go, well, but look at all this stuff that's not the way it's supposed to be. Why is it that way? And they actually step up and do something about it. Bill Hybels is one of my favorite leaders and pastors. He calls this a holy discontent. In fact, you know, the Bible talks about you should be content. And so you say, well, how can you champion a discontentedness? Well, he talks about how there are certain things God does in our lives that make us really uncomfortable. And we begin to form this holy discontent because we begin to have a burden for things that aren't the way they're supposed to be. In fact, he says every now and then you have this Popeye moment. Remember Popeye, that lovable, affable figure? You know, he's always lovable until what? Somebody messed with olive oil, right? And if you're like younger than 30, you have no idea what I'm talking about. All right, well, let me just show you. Remember Popeye, whenever somebody messed with olive oil and he kind of had enough, remember what he'd say?
That's all I can stand. I can't stand no more.
He's like, that's all I can stand. Great English, by the way. I can't stand it no more. So, you know, whenever there was a problem and it just was, he'd had enough on it, he's like, that's enough. I can't stand it no more. I need to do something about this. That's the Popeye moment right there. And so, you know, this is what game changers do. They're not content with the way things are. In the Old Testament, one of my favorite heroes is a guy by the name of Nehemiah. And Nehemiah gives us a great picture of this holy discontent. In fact, we find his story back around 444 BC. So this is way back in the Old Testament. And this is in the time of a king who was named Artaxerxes. And Nehemiah was working for Artaxerxes. And basically, if you grew up in the church, you probably remember Nehemiah's story. And you knew that Nehemiah was a cupbearer to the king. Well, what that really means is he's a wine taster. All right, Nehemiah basically tastes the wine before it goes to the king so that if somebody poisoned it, that it wouldn't knock off the king. It would knock him off instead. So he's got like a one-time and you're out job, right? You get one shot at this. And so he's a wine taster, but he's more than that. He's actually a confidant to the king. He's in a certain sense a friend of the king. He's an official, and he also was a Jewish man. And so we don't know, based on what we know about Nehemiah, if he previous to this encounter had ever been to Jerusalem before, to, you know, kind of the homeland of the Israelites. At that particular time in the world, the Babylonians were kind of the big dog on campus, and Artaxerxes was the king of the Persian Empire, who was kind of the up-and-coming big dog. And so the Babylonians had basically conquered Israel. They destroyed their walls, and this was back when another king you may have heard of, King Nebuchadnezzar, was king, and there were three guys that he kind of, you know, called out: Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, or to bed we go, whichever way you like to say it. You know, those guys, or Daniel was another figure back then, if you were a Bible reader. And so fast forward from those guys about 100 years, and Nehemiah's friends are in the city of Jerusalem, and they're writing him letters and saying, Nehemiah, our city's in shambles. The walls have been broken down for years. Everything's in disrepair. And this bothers Nehemiah. In fact, here's what it says in Nehemiah chapter 1. It says, as soon as I heard these words, I sat down and wept and mourned for days. And I continued fasting and praying before the God of heaven. And I said, O God of heaven, the great and awesome God who keeps covenant and steadfast love with those who love him and keep his commandments, let your ear be attentive and your eyes be open to hear the prayers of your servant. And so Nehemiah, he sits down and he weeps. He breaks down. Now, what's odd about this is many people have been seeing these walls. I mean, the people have been living in this community for years, decades. And in fact, most of the people, nearly every person, at least from a timing standpoint, in Jerusalem at the time, everybody that was alive wasn't around when the walls were up and good. Everybody has only known the walls to be broken down that's alive at this point in the world. And so, but Nehemiah takes it personally. Right? He's not content with the status quo, and so he takes this personally. See, this is another thing that happens with game changers. They're not only discontent with the status quo, but there's something that emotionally wrecks them, something that just emotionally gets them down. And see, this is hard for us to fully understand. It wasn't just the walls of Jerusalem were in shambles. It wasn't just a physical thing. It wasn't just that people could come in and out of that community and take things from people, steal, rape, and rampage the city, and then leave with no repercussions. It wasn't that the city wasn't just protected. It's like the walls being down. This was like a national identity crisis for this community. Right, that'd be like in Indianapolis, like if, you know, the Indianapolis Motor Speedway was in total disrepair, or, you know, the canal walk downtown, or Banker's Life, or Lucas Oil, the roof didn't work anymore, the windows were knocked out. I mean, the things that we say, this is our heritage here in Indianapolis, these are in just total disrepair. It would like affect the self-esteem of our city. Right? And so this just like strikes Nehemiah to his core. Have you ever been wrecked for something? Have you ever just been really wrecked for some burden for something? You know, we all have different capacities, and this is going to look different for every single one of us, but you know it when it happens to you. For me, I remember the first time I was wrecked. It was when I was 16 years old. I was hanging out about 11 o'clock at a pizza place with a few friends after a Friday night football game. And it was near my curfew, so I was getting ready to head home. And I was driving home. I got about 2.5-3 miles from my house. And all of a sudden, there were police officers that were coming up to block off the road that I needed to go down to get to my house. I saw a mass of lights in the down the road. And I just had that like sinking in my gut feeling, like, I wonder if I know somebody and whatever happened up there. So I had to go around the detour, and I got home. I was late. I'd explained to my parents why I wasn't home on time. And nonetheless, there's just that, you know that sinking like feeling you get when there's something that's not right, you just don't know what it is? Well, I wake up the next morning, and you know those moments when you hear something that you don't like or just radically changes life, and you know exactly where you were? Well, I remember exactly where I was. I was standing over a toilet with a Swisher cleaning it. I was doing my morning chores, you know, and that's what happened. The phone rings. My dad was a pastor. And I hear him say, oh, long pause. I'm so sorry. Another long pause. I'm so sorry. And I knew something was not right. And so I'm just standing cleaning that toilet. And a couple moments later, my dad comes and puts his hand on my back. And he says, Kurt, you know, that accident you saw last night, that was your good friend and teammate, Brad Johnson, and he didn't make it. Head-on collision killed him instantly. I just got off the phone with his parents. That emotionally wrecked me, a 16-year-old. Now, it wasn't just that it wrecked me because I lost a friend, lost a teammate. We played basketball for years together, baseball for years. He was captain of our basketball team, you know, varsity starting quarterback his sophomore. He was a phenomenal athlete. But it emotionally wrecked me because I didn't know that he knew who Jesus was. In fact, I had many conversations with God shortly after that. I'm like, God, why him and not me? I was coming through there 5, maybe 10 minutes after him. Why couldn't I have been the one that got hit head on? Because I knew you. I know who you are. I would have been going, you know, spending eternity with you. Why Brad? Why Brad? And that moment emotionally wrecked me. In fact, as I kind of look back on that, I look back and realize it was in that moment that I kind of committed my life. And I didn't know I was going to be a pastor. But I said, I'm going to make it part of my personal agenda to make sure as many people know Jesus as possible. I want people to experience what I've experienced. See, whenever somebody changes something, it starts with somebody getting emotionally wrecked. Where you're just like, man, this is not right. This should not be this way. For Nehemiah, He is completely undone. And the king looks at him, and he's trying to figure out what's going on with him. Look at chapter 2, verse 2. It says, "And the king said to me, 'Why is your face sad, seeing you are not sick?'" The king's like, "Man, you look like crap. You look, and I know you're not sick, so what's going on?" And look at what Nehemiah says. He says, "Why should not my face be sad when the city, the place of my father's graves, lies in ruins and its gates have been destroyed by fire?" He goes on and says, "Let letters be given to me and the governors of the province beyond the river, that they may let me pass through until I come to Judah, and a letter to Asaph, the keeper of the king's forest, and that he may give me timber to make beams for the gates of the fortress of the temple, for the wall of the city and the house that I shall occupy. And the king granted me what I asked, for the good hand of my God was upon me." So Nehemiah goes from being totally wrecked to saying, "You know what, I've got a responsibility in this. I'm a part of the solution. I've got a job to do right here." And so he goes out and he begins to get a plan to rebuild the walls. Third thing a game changer does is they begin to realize they've got to gather resources. That's what game changers do. He says, "Hey, let me write some letters. I'm going to need timber. I'm going to need beams. I'm going to need all these things. If I'm going to change this thing, it's not the way it should be. I'm going to need to gather resources." See, whenever you change the game, it's always going to require resources. It's always going to require money. It's always going to require time. I mean, think about it. Other than like coming to faith in Jesus, receiving the free gift of grace, after that, there's really nothing else in life that's free, right? Everything requires time and money. I mean, every now and then I'll have conversations with couples who their marriage is just struggling. And they're like, "Man, my marriage sucks." I'm like, "Okay, you're going to have to get some marriage counseling." Like, "I don't want to pay for marriage counseling." "All right, your marriage is going to continue to suck then." All right, because it's going to cost you something. It's going to require both time and money. Or you say, "Well, I really want to get in shape." All right, it's going to cost you something. You're going to have to get a gym membership. You're going to have to get some equipment. You're going to have to put some time into getting in shape. Or, you know, you want your kids to get a higher education. It's going to take money. It's going to take time. You know, every now and then somebody will say, "Well, I really want to date people." All right, you can't be a tightwad and date people. It's going to take money, right? You can't like not want to spend anything, and it's going to take time. See, nothing ever changes without resources. And so, you know, here at Crosspoint, we don't apologize at all for, you know, talking regularly about how it requires money and it requires time, volunteering, serving to create change, because we're changing the landscape of people's lives in our community. And this is what happens when God enlists people into the family business. Now, if you're newer here at Crosspoint, let me just kind of put you at ease. If you've never been through one of these with us before, you know, let me just tell you, you're never going to receive a letter, you're never going to receive an email or a phone call where we give you some fair share number and we say, "Hey, here's your part, you do this part financially." All right, we've never done that, we never will do that. That's how like the normal church does things. We're not a normal church. All right, and so what we want to do through these 5 weeks is we all want to connect with God. We want us to go and just hear from God as we walk through these next 5 weeks. And for some of us, you're going to hear God go, "You know what? Just keep doing what you're doing. All right, you're being a game changer. You're on the wall. You're fulfilling your commitment you made 18 months ago. Just keep doing what you're doing." Some of us, we're going to hear that we need to adjust our commitment. Maybe we've not been able to start fulfilling our commitment. And God's going to say, "Hey, you need to adjust that." You're going to have the opportunity to do that over these 5 weeks. For some of us, maybe God's blessed you and you're able to do more than you thought you were originally able to. All right, so God's going to call you to do more. Or maybe for many of us who have joined Crosspoint over the last 18 months, you're going to get wrecked for the very first time and you're going to get in on the back end of this for 18 months and say, "Hey, I want to be a game changer with the Game Change campaign." Maybe for some of us, we're going to start volunteering. All right, you've never volunteered in a church before. All right, listen, we need all hands on deck. Right, we need people serving 2 times a month as we expand environments. We'll talk a little more of that in a moment. Others are going to share their story. They're going to be generous that way. In fact, I want you to hear somebody's story today. I want you to help me welcome Brad Brickley to the stage. Come on up here, Brad. Let's welcome him as he comes and joins me up here. Brad is our newest hire here at Crosspoint. In fact, today is his very first day full-time on the job. How about that, man? Yeah, awesome.
And then I get a day off the next day.
I know, and then he gets a day off. His first day, second day on the job, you get a holiday.
It's good to
right?
Get your way to start it.
Yeah, so Brad, he's been part-time on our team, working a full-time other job in the secular world, and you just joined our team as our production coordinator, doing a lot of the behind-the-scenes support for what happens in this room. And just take us through what that's looked like for you and Lauren over the last few weeks and months, because I know initially you weren't sure it was even doable, you know, to leave your other job and commit to what you're doing here with us. So
right, yeah. So initially, I think I, you know, all the things that I've been doing up to this point. It's been exciting, been fun, and I've really enjoyed helping lead the team back there, and kind of prepping things for Sundays. And initially, when I was offered to at least apply for the job, I just went ahead and turned it down. I think and not accepting the offer, I'm looking back on it now, it was more out of fear than anything else. And it was actually one of the weeks that we, I can't remember what the series we were in, but we were talking about the fear factor. Mm-hmm. And I think I was on stage that week, you were teaching. And so going through that, that was one initial turning point there, and kind of got me thinking, okay, well, maybe I'll just kind of put my name in the hat again, just to see how things are going, see how things play out. And then the company I was working for, it actually was going through a buyout. So I there was some uncertainty there as well. So mm-hmm. having options open and making sure things were still stable for our family with job and everything, that was important. So wasn't really sure where it was all going to lead until PJ actually offered the job officially a few weeks ago, and I ended up leading sound, running sound for the CSM, the back to school bash mm-hmm. thing, and it was actually a moment where he was praying during the segment they were doing, and he was talking about where do you belong, and where is it that you belong here, and. The first initial reaction for me was here, mm-hmm. and that was just at that point, it's like, okay, well, I guess this is where I'm going to be at. Mm-hmm. So, wow. and from there, it just kind of, after that, it was kind of funny. After I officially accepted the job, the whole fear just went away. Yeah. All the fear behind it just went away, and it's like, well, this just seems like the perfect fit. Yeah. And so now I'm just excited to get started.
Awesome. You know, and it's not a status quo thing to leave the secular workforce and go work for a church. I mean, that's a very out of the norm thing. Mm-hmm. You know, when I first met Brad, it was in the entryway of Fall Creek Intermediate, mm-hmm. and yep. I'll never forget it. You're there, I think, for your wife's roommate's baptism.
Yep.
And we talked. In fact, I think your wife maybe introduced me, or maybe I can't remember who introduced us together.
Yeah. I think it was her name was Mary. That she got baptized. It was her mom that introduced you and I together that day. And yeah, they'd been trying to get us to come to Crosspoint for a while, and we just never had the time to dedicate to it. So.
Yeah, and I just remember you saying, man, those guys in the band are really good.
Yeah.
And, you know, and I'm like, well, hey, let's go meet them. You're like, well, they'd never have time for me. I mean, they're good. So, you know, we went in and you met PJ that day.
Yep, and then I was on the next Sunday.
And you're on the next Sunday. Because that's, when we say we're people of action, we really are. Yep. We're going to talk about that in a moment. But that, you know, you've been involved in worship leadership up front. Yep. Probably will continue to have some of that. You're really forming the team in the back. But you've volunteered here at Crosspoint. Now you're coming on board. What has that meant to you and Lauren over the last number of years? Really about eight or nine years.
Yeah, actually it's about 10 now.
About 10 years.
I was looking back at it because I was a junior in college at that point. And that was about 10 years ago, which makes me feel a little old. But but anyway, so yeah, it was actually interesting. I did not grow up in the church. We didn't go to church growing up. We were we watch football on Sundays. Yeah. That's what you do on Sundays is what we were doing. So when I got involved in church when I was in high school, and then throughout college we started exploring and then found Crosspoint. But as we've gone through just learning how the church works, how you're supposed to do life with God, it just has really shaped and grown our family in a positive direction, and that holy discontent that you're talking about is what I felt before I came in here. But then we always feel like it's comfortable, but God works in the uncomfortable, mm-hmm. and so that's where we feel we've kind of learned as we've gone through things is. Just before things are about to change, you're going to feel that discomfort, and then finally it changes, and then you don't know why you didn't do it before, and it just makes so much more sense. So yeah, we are our family's completely ingrained now with serving. My wife serves in the check-in now, and we actually left for a period of time to help plant a church, and then came back, and so we are. I never thought when I was growing up that I would be part of a church, but the community part is the part that really draws me in is being able to connect with people and then help also lead the team back there now and just really and try to do something that's making an impact. Yeah. So. Awesome.
Hey, let's thank Brad for being a game changer. You're a game changer, Brad. Thank you. See, this is what God does. He enlists us. Now, not everybody's going to quit their job and come work for us. We can't afford you all right? But this is what God does, whether it's as a volunteer or as a staff member. You know, in the Game Change campaign, just to give you a few specifics, we're 48% of the way through the campaign. We're going to hit the 50% mark in terms of time during this month. And we already have 50% of the commitments that have been given. And so what that means is we had committed $888,000 above and beyond normal giving over 3 years, and we've already brought in $446,000. Isn't that awesome? You guys have done a phenomenal job. Way to go. Now, of that, we've already spent about $350,000 on the four initiatives we said we were going to do, which are, you know, ongoing operations, which includes helping fund, you know, our mortgage and different things we committed to when we got into this building. Ministry expansion, which includes two full-time staff members we've added over the last 18 months, multiple part-time staff, as we've been expanding our infrastructure, actually building an infrastructure so we can begin some new things. Building updates and improvements, we've had a number of things we've been doing to update environments, things we weren't able to do when we moved into the building, some corrections, some signage, and then new initiatives. There's some new things we still have planned, and then, you know, the Thursday service is one of the new initiatives, one of the major initiatives, multiplying our environment. That was built into the Game Change, and we're at the place where we're ready to pull the trigger on that. Now, we've got about $100,000 of capital in the bank right now, but I'm telling you what, we're going to be burning through that a lot over the next half a year or so as we expand and as we brought staff on for growth. And you know what I love about this? I love that when you look down the road, your left and right, let me just look down the road for a moment. You know, the people around you, we're a church who doesn't just think about things and pray about things. We're a church who does things. We're people of action. This is what Nehemiah does. See, Nehemiah, he gets wrecked. He gathers resources. He gets a bunch of people around him to get things done. And it's because, see, you can't change the game in and of yourself. You can't be a game changer by yourself. You have to be around people. He gets people to, these Jews around him to help rebuild the wall. And take a look at what he says next. Nehemiah 4 says, "So we built the wall, and all the wall was joined together to half its height, for the people had a mind to work." They had a mind to work. They're getting after it. They're building it up. Why are they building it up? Because game changers have a mind to work. I love that about Crosspoint. I love that we don't just pray about things. I've been about churches that, you know, at churches that are really good about, oh, let's just pray about everything. I'm all for prayer, but it never got beyond the praying. I mean, you know, I love that we don't just think about things. I've been in churches that are like, oh, is his interpretation correct? Or is this the interpretation that's correct? You know, we're a church who works about things. We kind of keep it simple. Right? I love that we're like, hey, Jesus, he came, he died, all right? He rose, he poured himself into people, and you're in my job, once we've experienced that, is to reflect that to other people. We're to be a blessing to other people. We work, we get creative, we push the envelope, we do things that aren't being done. We try to create new pathways for people that are out of the status quo to experience Jesus in new ways. And I tell you what, we take some criticism for it as well. I mean, nobody ever criticizes people when they're just in the status quo, right? Because that's what everybody's doing. Nobody criticizes, you know, churches who are just maintaining the holy huddle and just kind of staying to themselves. I mean, we take criticisms because we go out on limbs. We go way out on limbs at times to try to connect with people who hate church. We regularly do this. It's why, you know, on game day, Super Bowl weekend, you know, we have beers and brats in the parking lot. You can just come and bring your rowdy friends. And because we're trying to connect with people who don't like church. We're going to try to help them see there's something different. I will do anything short of sinning to help people make that connection. And when we do that, we open ourselves up to criticism because we're trying to do new things. We're trying to push the envelope. And somebody's going to criticize you when you push the envelope. As we've been developing our promotional strategy for the early weekend service Thursday nights, I was talking to my coach, one of my mentors, this last week, and he said, "Kurt, have you ever thought about, you know, calling, like, branding this kind of like Sleep In on Sundays?" I'm like, "Ooh, I like that." He's like, "Now you're going to take a whole bunch of church people off if you, you know, put that out in the community." I'm like, "I like it even more because, you know, because," and so you can see my shirt. We've already got the shirts in production, you know, because, and it's not that, you know, there's going to be people when we start branding this in the community that are going to be like, "Oh, they're defaming the Sabbath." Well, we're not defaming the Sabbath. It's just that if people who aren't interested in God were interested in going to church on Sundays, guess what? They'd already be there, right? We're trying to create a pathway for people who aren't in our seats on weekends or in Graces or Heartland or any of the churches in our community. We're trying to say, how do we create a pathway for people and capture their attention that if you like to sleep in on Sundays, hey, join us for Thursdays. Sunday's going to be here. Sunday's not going anywhere. All right? We've got to do things different. We've got to get out of the status quo. See, Nehemiah, he gets criticized because he was going against the status quo. Every great leader knows that if you really want to change something, you got to get out of the status quo. So Nehemiah starts building stuff, and he gets criticized, and his detractors begin to come around and kind of pepper him. In fact, they start going, oh, you can't change this. What are you doing, Nehemiah? You're a cupbearer. You're not a builder. What are you doing trying to restore the walls? Listen, Nehemiah, if a fox, even said, read the story, if a fox gets up on that wall is going to crumble. Listen, when we started Crosspoint 10 years ago, there were detractors. There were people saying, oh, it's never going to happen. Never going to work. It sounds like you're wanting to create a concert with a message in the middle, as one person put it. I'm like, yeah, that's exactly what we do on weekends. All right? Except we want you to sing along, not just watch. And, you know, I had somebody come to me from the former church I was at, and they said, hey, let me get this straight. So you're gonna leave a stable paycheck and a building and a ministry that's developed, and you're going to go someplace that has no paycheck, that has no building and no people. Is that correct? I'm like, yeah. Like, it's never going to work. I just thought they just have no vision. They haven't seen it yet. And so, you know, what do you know? God has continued to work. God continues to show up and do new things 10 years later. Nehemiah, he's on the wall. He's focused on what he's doing, and the detractors show up. Here's what it says in Nehemiah 6. It says, I say to him, Nehemiah, come, and let's meet together. Do you know these words right here are, if you want to suck the life of God out of anybody, you know how to do it? Just have a meeting. That's how you do it. It's like death by meeting, right? Let's just collapse. Nehemiah, this thing you're doing, this, you know, let's talk about this new thing you're doing and the impact. I mean, we're not really sure about this. And Nehemiah, he stays up on the wall, right? He looks down at him. He's like, hey, it sounds like a great opportunity to come down and meet with you, but I've got some work to do up here. He says, you know, I'd really like to hang out with you guys. It'll be a year or so until I'm done, and then I might be able to come down. Because inside him, his conscience is telling him, hey, you got to stay up here. In fact, here's what he says. He says, I am doing a great work, and I cannot come down. Why should the work stop while I leave it and come down to you? See, no matter what you're changing, if you're changing your marriage, if you're changing your eating habits, if you're changing your health habits, if you're changing your workout routine, if you're changing your parenting, your spending patterns, whatever it is, there will always be people who will try to get you down off that wall. Anytime there's progress, anytime there's something moving forward, you know, you're going to be tempted to come down off that wall. Let me just say, don't do it. Don't do it. I want to encourage you on this. Some of you, you've been on that wall, man. You've been on that wall in the Game Change campaign, and you need to stay on that wall. All right, we've put a brand new envelope in your weekly today. It says Game Changers. You interacted with these 18 months ago. You know, sometime over this month, we're gonna ask you to prayerfully consider what your next 18 months looks like. If you're on that wall and you're just fulfilling your commitments, just keep after it. Maybe you're going to want to mark that box. You know, maybe God's going to say, hey, just keep doing what you're doing, all right? 36% of our commitments are either fulfilled or ahead of pace for the Game Change campaign. That's awesome. 60% are behind, and 3% haven't started. I mean, trend-wise, that's really, really good. It's why we're on pace. And let me just say, if you haven't started fulfilling your commitment or if you're behind, you know, there could be a lot of reasons. Maybe you didn't have a mind to work at it. Maybe you had a mind to go to the movies, but not to work at your Game Change thing. I don't know. Maybe life happened and you had some unexpected medical expenses or a job loss or, you know, whatever. That happens. And let me just say to you, you're going to have the opportunity to adjust that commitment. I mean, if you're not able to fulfill what you committed to, we want you to still be a part of this. There's going to be an opportunity for you to prayerfully say, okay, here's what my new adjustment is over this next month. I'm going to make this and say, here's what I'm going to walk out over the next 18 months. Maybe for some of us, you've been blessed and you have way more. You're able to do way more than God, you know, kind of gave you initially. And maybe God's going to say, hey, I want you to commit more. And so you're going to be able to do that. And for a number of us, you began attending over the last 18 months and you haven't been a part of this. And so this is your chance to get on the ground floor level of being a part of this game-changing thing that's happened and say, hey, I'm going to get emotionally wrecked. God may emotionally wreck you over these next 5 weeks. And you say, hey, I want to be a part of this. I want to make an 18-month commitment to being a part of this. See, the work is big. And when the work is big, God's intention is always to bring every single one of us on board. Right, it takes every single one of us, all hands on deck. And this isn't moralism. This isn't like, oh, everybody's got to do this or you're wrong. And no, this is about connection with God. You know, so I want to ask you to prayerfully consider what God's asking you to do, depending on where you are over this next month with this envelope. See, it's what God's doing in us and through us. The fifth attribute of a game changer is that game changers worship. See, Nehemiah, the last couple chapters of his story in the Old Testament are about how the nation of Israel is connecting with God and they're worshiping God because of what they're seeing God doing in their midst. And people are drawn into it because they had a mind to work and be a part of it. See, this really should be a spiritual journey. That's why I love these initiatives, these campaigns we do. We're going to continue to be in them because they grow us spiritually. We can't do some of these things in and of ourselves, but it's what God is doing in us and through us. See, the question really is, you know, that we all have to get to the core, you know, the kind of strip down and ask of ourselves is, where is my life going? You know, what's the mark that my life is leaving on our community, on our kids, and what God is doing in the world? I mean, for many of us, what we consider a good life is I, you know, go to college and I get a good job and I, you know, get out and find a good spouse and I have some kids and hopefully they're good too. And then eventually, you know, I want them to get an education, so I fund their education. And then, you know, hopefully they get a good spouse. And then, you know, eventually I have grandkids and somewhere in there I retire and all, you know, and I, yeah, life is good. I mean, and there's nothing wrong with that plan. I'm on that plan. I'm somewhere in that plan, not real far down that road. But see, here's the thing with that plan. You don't need God at all to accomplish any of that. You need zero help from God. That is the status quo in our culture today. See, that is not the life of a game changer. That's not the life of a life of impact. Over the next 3 weeks, 4 weeks, we're going to be going into new territory. You know, we're going to begin in something that we've never done, that's not being done for the most part in our community here. We're going to be multiplying our environments. We're going to be taking what we do on Sundays and transporting that to Thursdays to have the same great experience. And we, if you want your life to be a life of impact, there are all kinds of opportunities for you to apply your life to what's going to be happening there. And so I want you to take a look. Here's the volunteer scoreboard to launch the third service. We need 111 additional volunteers to what currently serve. We have 240 to 250 people that serve over the course of a month here at Crosspoint. All right, we're going to need an increase of over 100 people, and you can see where those are, all right? Volunteers serving two times a month. 240, 250 adults over a month, that's less than half of the adult population that's here throughout the month on weekends. So this is a great opportunity, if you're not connected, to get connected and to plug in somewhere. And so as you look at that, you know, the typical response is, well, God, do you want to use me in this? That's not the question. All right, if you're here and this is where you're connected, God wants you to be a part of this. It's not even a question of really where, though you might look at that and say, well, I'm creative or I sing and so I want to consider something there, or I, you know, love kids, or I can teach or do tech stuff with kids or check kids in, whatever that means, or hospitality. The bigger question is, God, what do I need to adjust in my life so I can be a part of this? What do I need to adjust in my life to be a part of this? Serving two times a month on a Thursday, or two times a month on a Sunday, because we're going to have some volunteers move to Thursday. This is an all hands on deck moment. In fact, that's why this card, this volunteer card in your weekly, I want you all to just take this out for a moment. If you don't currently serve someplace, I want you to consider what your role is going to be as we launch this third service. And sign up for a first serve. Just try some things out. We don't just throw you in. We actually have you try some things. So the way you can do this is you just put your name on here. You can put your name at the name. Make sure your email is very legible so that we can read it. That's one of the biggest breakdowns, is we can't read email. And then just look through here and pick one or two places. You say, hey, I'd like to try something right here. I want to use my life to impact and be a game changer because I have a mind to work. I have a mind to get involved. And pick an area or two, and then pick a date at the bottom. And like Brad, man, we will give you an opportunity to get involved. This is how God changes things. And this is always a test for our community of whether we're going to rise up and we're going to step in and we're going to be a part of this next big thing God is doing. All right, and so if you've never served in church, then maybe this is your next step. In fact, these are our next steps this morning. If you look at the back of your connection card, you know, one's just return next weekend, which we hope you'll be back. But then second and third is I'll prayerfully consider what God is doing and wanting me to commit to financially. You know, whether that's staying on what I'm doing or upping it or adjusting it down because I've had some life that's hit me, or maybe jumping in for the first time. And where am I going to plug in on Sunday or Thursday to be a game changer? And you know, you might be thinking, man, Kurt, you're pretty fanatical about this. You know, when we first were starting Crosspoint, before we ever had a service, I mean, I've had a lot of them. I get emotionally wrecked almost every single weekend. But there was a moment before we started that, again, just kind of championed why what we're doing is so important. We were out at a water park in the community. We didn't have weekend services yet. Julie and I were getting our kids in the car. And as we were getting the kids in the car, I heard a squealing of tires and then a screeching of tires. And I look up, and in the street, right in front of the water park, there was these two doors and this big old truck that opened, and this guy jumps out, and he literally, I kid you not, throws this girl out of the car and into the ditch about 10 feet. And she just rolls in the ditch, probably, I don't know, 18, 19, 20-year-old. And I don't know if you've ever seen domestic violence. I mean, I hope you never do, because you can never get it out of your mind. And I'm strapping my kids in, thinking, man, she needs help. I need to run that way. About that time, we hear sirens, and an officer comes up and kind of tends to the girl in the ditch, and then another officer chases down the guy that's, you know, done this. And I remember just thinking there, as we're thinking about, okay, how is Crosspoint, what became known as Crosspoint, going to change this community? And I remember thinking, you know, they're going to catch that guy, and he's probably going to sit in jail for a while. I mean, is that really going to be a game changer in his life? I mean, does the justice system really have the ability to be a game changer and change the trajectory of somebody's life? Probably not. I mean, are there laws or legislation that can be put into place or some kind of counseling program that can take that hardened heart, whatever's caused him to respond that way, that's going to cause that to radically change? Like, no, I don't think there is. And it just hit me that what we have bent our lives to do and create, where Jesus comes in and radically does what only Jesus can do, where people can see that God is bigger and better and closer than they ever thought or imagined, and that there's a love that he runs after us with, a scandalous kind of love that infuses us and begins to change us from the inside out. I thought this is about the only thing that gives that guy a hope. And again, it was in that moment we were relentlessly focused on, okay, how do we create this for people in our community? We've been doing it for 10 years since. Because that's what it means to be game changers. God, I just pray that that would happen in our hearts right now, God, that we don't want to be the status quo here. We want our hearts to break for the things that your heart breaks for. And God, we're thankful for all you've done in the last 10 years, and we're thankful for what you've done in our lives as we've invested in this bigger thing that you're calling us to, and we'd love more of that, but God, don't make that be our focus. God, help us to see how our lives can directly come against and for creating positive trajectory, changing things in our community. And God, I'd even be remiss if right now I didn't just give the opportunity for anybody who's being warm to a life with God. Maybe for the first time you're seeing that there's a God who runs after me, not after me to kill me or condemn me, but a God who runs after me to love on me. And maybe your heart's just being warmed and opened to that right now and you want to receive him. You can do that right now by just saying, God, I want to receive you. Would you just come in and would you do your life-changing work and would you begin to just cover over all the bad and remove the bad and the broken and the sin and infuse my heart with your goodness and your love and your grace? And would you help me to be able to be used to reflect you to others? So God, just remind us, you never give up on us. And God, we'll never give up here on being relentless to help people see you for who you are.